shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right. What is this, like episode 231? Oh, gosh, I am so out of it. I have no idea where we're at these days. I can't even remember what the last show I did was. I've had two reruns in a row. So I apologize. Rerun Friday, rerun Monday. I'm starting, if you listen, you know this already, but I'm starting to consult more. And so a lot of times I am just off and on planes all day Friday. And then on Monday or Tuesday as well, another one of these coming up this weekend. I had really, 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 really hoped that we would find some time to do an interview or two in Santa Cruz over the weekend. And yeah, we were just so busy. It was just chaos, but good chaos, but just constant, just like so much stuff to put together for that event. So I was in Santa Cruz, California over the weekend for Shrine Coffee. Go to shrinecoffee.com, watch the video, and give some money to them to build a beautiful coffee house. Got a new project starting this weekend too. So this coming weekend, I'm going to Flint, Michigan to see about a whole brand new cool coffee project I'm working on. So I was in Santa Cruz all weekend. I love Santa Cruz. I absolutely adore Santa Cruz. So my old friend Ann Breiling that I have known, and we just told this story so many times, but I've known Ann since my freshman year of college at Thomas Aquinas College. And the night that we kind of like met for the first time, we kind of said hi to each other a couple times, like at little functions or whatever, but she ended up asking for a ride home to the school from Santa Barbara with me, and we ended up in the same car, and I just gave her a ride, and we started talking, and it turns out we both wanted to do this whole coffee house thing as a means of creating community for the sake of evangelization and discipleship. And she tells me that, and I'm like, hey, that's what I want to do. And so we kind of started talking about these projects and something in Santa Cruz, like in 1997, like at the beginning of the school year in the fall. And by early 2000s, we were talking about this as a possible location for it, early to mid 2000s, I think. And so to be doing Shrine Coffee is just, it's very satisfying. It's kind of there's been a slow, long building process with large gaps of like, well, we don't know if anything's ever going to happen, and attempts that we thought something was going to happen, then it didn't. And now it seems like it's going forward. We're doing it. And so we're certainly giving it our best shot so far. So, yes, I went out to Santa Cruz this weekend. So, okay, before we get to Santa Cruz, you got to get on a plane. I'm going to give you a little as is my custom, I'm going to give you the weekend recap. Most of the show is probably going to be kind of a weekend recap because I've got some insights from experiences that I had over the weekend that I want to talk about. And so I may just kind of, throw some stuff out there, but for starters, all right. So I flew with Clear for the first time, and I'm telling you what, that is the best $150 I've ever spent. So $150 I can get for like per year. I think it is, maybe it's for a couple years, and you just come up. I don't have to have ID or anything. You show them your boarding pass, put your fingerprint on a little scan, bloop, bloop, and you bypass the entire backup of security. Now, I was kind of bummed because I got the DIA to Denver International Airport, where that cattle guard thing can get really, really full. You can get it, and I just hate having to wait to get to security. And it was actually pretty empty when I got there. So it wouldn't have been that bad without Clear. And I'm like, dang it, I really kind of hoped that I would get there and it'd be like this zoo and I could walk right past the zoo and be like, yes, I feel, you know, it's not that I want to feel better than other people. I want to feel like I'm better than you, or I want to take pleasure in your pain. But I think it's like a Lucretius in On the Nature of Things talks about a certain kind of joy. And he describes it as a man standing on solid rock on the edge of the ocean, watching a ship kind of founder in the waves and fight for its life. It's not you're taking pleasure in this ship foundering. It's just that there's a certain pleasure, kind of a happiness in solidity while someone else is not solid, and it's just gratitude, you know? So, I think that it could be hard to do that consistently without, it's kind of subtly taking pleasure in other people's kind of misfortune. That you have to be kind of a good man to have that kind of pleasure consistently and it stay correct, you know. But yeah, and obviously I think he was using this as an allegory for the moral life and the soul and all this. But anyway, long story short, I was kind of hoping to have my Lucretian pleasure and see all these people stuck, and because I spent my $155 and went through the trouble of doing all the fingerprints, I could just go past them. But alas, there was no big backup. But it still felt pretty good to just walk up, and a concierge, nice pretty girl, says, "Hello, welcome, hi," and she, "Here, right here, beep, here, come with me, sir." You know, you're like, yes. I mean, normally you just like go and you trudge through this cattle thing for forever, and finally some TSA guy scowls at you like you're trying to do something wrong when you're like, "I'm just giving you my boarding pass, man." So yeah, it was kind of nice. I'm kind of down for the clear is awesome. I'm a fan. I can't wait to get TSA pre. So before I went and did my clear thing, I got there early. I took the lovely and talented Perry West to the airport with me, and he had to be there earlier, so I had some time to kill. So I went and did my finished up all of my application for pre, and God willing, that'll come back approved by the end of the week. So then I can use pre on my trip to Michigan over the weekend. But that's going to be just 1-2 punch. Like, shoes stay on, laptop stays in the bag, all that, belt stays on. You don't have to do any of that. You just basically, so with the combination of clear and pre, you just kind of roll right through. I'm super stoked on that. So as if to continue my amazing trip, to my amazing kind of upgrade to my travel experience, which security was pretty easy that day. It was pretty laid back, and there wasn't much of a backup, and I was, you know, I got through pretty quick. I had to take the shoes off and all that, no big. And but then, so right before I left, I checked in for my flight, and they offered me, every once in a while I get an offer from United. Like, they must have a lot of first class seats, and so not everyone upgraded. And they're like, "Hey, for X amount of money, you could have first class." And I look at it, and I think about how big I am and how I hate sitting back in those tiny little seats. And I'm going to probably get a drink on the plane anyway. And I'm like, all right, let's do this. Don't do it very often, but I was exhausted on a Friday afternoon, and I bit, and I paid for it, and I got first class. So I tell you what, man, the woman that I sat next to on last weekend's flight home gave me so many good insights on how to use segments and all that to kind of get premier upgrades and all that stuff on United. So I'm going to start booking with those things in mind, because I want to get up there where I can upgrade a lot, because first class is so much better. And given, okay, there's two aspects of first class. They treat you really well in first class. They're very nice to you. You kind of have, you definitely have that Lucretian feeling of when you get the board first and they take your jacket from you and they sit you down and they, "Can I get you something to drink?" And they bring you like a bourbon on the rocks. And you're sitting there talking to someone who works at Google, sipping on a bourbon while people are like filing in and going back. And you're like, man, I could really get used to this, you know? So, yes, I sat next to a dude that works at Google, and we had a beautiful, interesting conversation about Google and Google's culture and the physical space of their campus and what they offer people as far as like food and drink and all that. Cause he found out what I did for a living. So we started talking about that. And I've got a possible project coming up that would be kind of a cafe / food and drink solution for a decent sized campus, not Google campus level, but, you know. And so I was kind of quizzing him a little bit on what Google does, because they're kind of famous for their perks and for how out of the way they go. So, yeah, so first class. And so there was a couple behind us. Beautiful couple, beautiful kids. Well, at least one of the kids was absolutely bawling the entire time. So I'm in first class, but right behind me is kids crying the entire trip. And, you know, I'm going to say, I had that same experience on the way back, not in first class. And being able to have proper amount of room and a little meal that they give you and some and free booze. So I had, she had a Santa Julia Argentinian Malbec open and just kind of keeping my glass full. And so, you know what? Free decent red wine and a proper seat makes kids crying behind you a whole lot easier. and you know, and I tell you what, I ran the numbers on this, and I'm telling you, I've talked about this on the show before. I'm begging somebody in the airline industry to listen to me. I'm telling you, we could give everybody that much room. Not everybody free booze, not everybody all that, but there's no reason in the world that we couldn't have an airline that gave everyone the same amount of room that you get in first class. I've ran the numbers. I figured out what I paid for my ticket, and it's almost exactly the cheap version of the upgrade. So I'm telling you, if you just take, there's three rows on either side, one of those big planes, take one row out on either side, make it nothing but two, that would kill roughly 80 seats. I ran the numbers on it. It'd be a little over $100 for to add to the tickets, and you could just be an airline of nothing but first class. Not free booze and all that, but you got room to sit. I'm telling you, I would fly it every time. I pay an extra $100 every single time to not have to cram myself back in that tiny little seat. Now, maybe not everybody would. I'm a big guy. So, well, there you go. So, there's my rant about first class. My jubilant exhortation of how amazing it was at first class. All right, so let's go to the break when we get back. You will got something else. Listen in the counter position.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on the counter position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on friend of the show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to the counter position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, so as I said, I was in Santa Cruz, California over the weekend. And so I flew in to San Jose. My friend Ann picked me up at the airport. Nice little small airport. Really, really cool. I'm look forward to flying in there more. Other times that I've gone to Santa Cruz on business, I've usually kind of taken a longer kind of a trip and flew in down south, drove up the coast, did the business, and then drove back down the coast. And so this time around, I didn't have much time, so I had to fly in up north. First time flying into San Jose, big fan. Really good airport, pretty efficient, small, not Santa Barbara small, but small. Happy, nice experience. So Shrine Coffee, Santa Cruz, Ann picked me up. We went, hung out, saw Sue and Amber at the house. I stayed with Ann, so her friends were kind of crashing there. And Amber was already cooking. So Amber. I wrote on my notes Amanda, which we were accidentally calling her Amanda a couple of times this weekend. So shout out to Amber and Amanda. She was already cooking. Like, she's like this incredible chef and baker, our friend Amber, and she just knocked it out of the park. I mean, she just cooked and cooked and cooked. She was already working on pastry dough and all this stuff, which what ended up being these little caramelized onion, heirloom tomato, basil, balsamic reduction little tarts that were like, oh my god, they were so good. So after we got up on Saturday and headed over to Cat and Cloud. Now Cat and Cloud is amazing. Cat and Cloud is a new coffee roaster and shop, just open, like they've been open less than a week in Santa Cruz, California. So if you haven't been, go. Cat and Cloud is Jared Truby and Chris Baca. both of Baca started off, I think, at Ritual up in San Francisco, came down to Verve for a long time, then ended up, if I'm not mistaken, down at Honeyco and Scout Coffee down in San Luis Obispo for a while. And now they've started their own project in Pleasure Point right around the corner from the original Verve. And it is a beautiful shop. And hands down, I've said this time and again over the weekend, there are not two people in the specialty coffee industry with a better reputation as being professionals and being just good human beings than Jared Truby and Chris Baca. I love them both deeply. They're just the coolest guys. And they were so supportive. We started talking about our project and what we wanted to use their coffee, and they were just super kind and really, really accommodating. They're right in the middle of their first week, and we're some people just show up out of nowhere and want to talk to them about a wholesale account, you know, and they were just so cool. They just were so supportive. We pulled up to Cat and Cloud the first time, and Truby was outside eating lunch, and he kind of recognized me. I've met these guys on occasion. It's not like you could say to Chris or Jared, you know, hey, Andrew Raley, and go, oh yeah, the guy from Calix. I mean, but they know me. We've met at events and met in the shops and stuff. And so they are always like, hey, wait a minute, I know you. Yeah. You know, they kind of figure it out. Like, I think Chris probably knows me now, 'cause we had several conversations over the weekend. But those guys just get it. And also, I met Charles too later on, the third partner. I can't remember his last name. And he just totally got it too. They're just like, I don't know who these guys are in the sense of like philosophically or whether they have any kind of religion or not, but they just really, really understood the goodness of trying to create a place where different types of people could be together and have conversation and some kind of, we're this church, but we're trying to reach out to people and give them a place where they feel comfortable, where we can earn the right to be heard. They absolutely loved the idea, and we're making comparison to other projects like the Abbey and stuff, knew exactly what we were doing and understood it completely. And it just amazes me. I'm going to talk about this probably at the end of the show a little bit, how amazed I am when some people get it and other people that should get it don't get it, you know? But anyway, Cat and Cloud, absolutely amazing shop, beautiful coffee. And I tell you what, I saw something pretty cool at Cat and Cloud. They're pretty innovative guys, and they're kind of following along the lines of Charles Babinski and kind of breaking some of the third wave rules and kind of going back into taboo territory of second wave, but in a different way. So Babinski went back to doing longer pulled shots and using volumetric dosing on the espresso. So instead of a barista manually watching and cutting off based on a timer, the espresso shot, it's just you program the machine and it does it for you, and you just kind of have to watch the time and watch the quality of the shot, you know, which was absolutely the norm in the 90s. In early to mid 2000s, but it's really kind of fallen out of favor. And I've been doing manual cutoff and start and cutoff on my shots since 99 under the influence of David Schomer and Espresso Vivace. So to go to see someone like Babinski down at GMB in LA who was, you know, US barista champion, it was last year before last, going to volumetric dosing, and they were also kind of championing batch brew. They didn't do manual brew bar. So they, so there's been kind of a move towards going back and getting some of these babies you threw out with the bathwater and, slaying some sacred cows, like having to do manual brewing, right? By the cup brewing, you know, pour overs and whatnot, which we're going to do. I think it's worth doing, but I have a good reason for doing it, and it's relational, not coffee wise. So Cat and Cloud is doing a so hey, timeout, just sidebar, if you're listening for the first time, this show is called The Counter Position because it's my take on the world from my position, which is behind the counter. So I am the founder of this thing called Calix, which is an apostolate and consulting apostolate that helps people build coffee houses. So I've spent the last 20 plus years behind the bar pulling shots as a barista, and I still spend quite a bit of time each week as a working barista. So, coffee culture and hospitality culture and food and wine and all that are definitely a part of this show. If you're listening for the first time, like, why is this guy talking about the evolution of coffee technology and how we use it? Because it's part of the show. So, So continuing on that kind of that theme of letting technology do what technology does well. So there's two things that I saw that Cat and Cloud's doing. They're doing all the third wave stuff amazing. The pastry's off the chain. Actually, the pastry place that Amber works for, which I'm blanking their name. I'll have to look it up over the break, does the pastries for the shop, and they're just absolutely beautiful. They're so good. I had a ham and cheese croissant that was off the chain. And all their stuff looks so good. Big old giant square sheet pie, like a blackberry looking pie or something. Oh my gosh, it's so delicious and beautiful. So they're doing everything, all the third wave espresso menu you would expect, and all the cool stuff, one and ones, the little macchiato with a shot on the side that Bach is kind of famous for. They're doing all that, but they're doing a couple things that I find really interesting that I want to talk about. And one of them, I'm going to have to admit, shocked me and it challenged me a little bit. So the first one just amazed me. They have an entire Marzocco espresso machine, Estrada, I think, which they have dialed the pressure down on. So normally, I think city water pressure is, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 6. And then the pressure on a pump amplifies it to about 9 bars, about 130 to 140 PSI. And that's how you pull espresso. Well, they've hacked this espresso machine and kind of tuned the pressure way down to where it sounds like, I mean, I don't know, maybe not all city water pressure is that high. They're only getting like 3 bar out of it, which if I understand it right, if my tech is right, which it very well may not be, it may be they're actually lowering city water pressure. It's actually coming in slower and less forceful than city water pressure would be, because it's only coming in at about 3 times atmosphere, which is not very forceful, right? And what they're doing is they put in the amount of coffee that you would use roughly to make a pour over or an AeroPress or something like that. And they're basically making an AeroPress, except, or something along those lines, they're using slight pressure to brew coffee. And so it takes about 70 seconds, and this coffee, I don't know if they're doing a pre-infusion cycle or what the deal is, but you dose up a cup, you dose up a portafilter with ground coffee, put it in, hit the button, and you pull a full, you know, probably, you know, 350 to 400 milliliters of coffee. It was about an 11, 12 ounce old school diner mug. So probably about 350 milliliters of coffee, of water, through this, through this coffee grounds at, you know, 3 bar. And that's how they're doing single serve brews. It's like super fast, and it was really, really good. I think they're still working on it and working on getting it dialed in. But it was really good. The batch brew was sick too. I got refills on batch brew. But it was really good. And the last thing that they're doing is they're doing a blended drink, which called a creamy beige. And I'm not sure what all's in it. I didn't get a chance to talk to him about it. I tasted it. It was pretty good. I mean, it was not like super duper sweet. It had a better texture. You could tell it was had a more real texture. They were clearly making it with real ingredients. It wasn't like a powder or anything or any kind of weird premix or something. I'm not sure what was in it, but it was pretty decent. It was tasty. It wasn't just candy, and but it was a blended drink. It was like a coffee granita kind of a thing. It was good. I mean, I don't know that I'm ready to jump back onto the blended drink bandwagon, but they're doing it. And I'm like, tell you what, that shows you that, some of these third wave guys are, not too pretentious to do something like that. So let's head off to the break. When we get back, we got more up our sleeve.
Then how we crave a hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so we're talking about my trip to Santa Cruz. So far, I've talked about Clear and how good first class is. And I'm telling you, I always meet the most interesting people in first class, too. Anytime I get upgraded or something, like this time out, I talked to a guy that I sat next to a guy, an Indian guy from Southern India that is a programmer and works on user interfaces for apps on for Google. And I had this long conversation with him, and he asked, you know, he was using Android. I was using an iPhone, though he was using an Apple laptop and using Chrome. I told him, I'm like, man, I could just never go to Android because I need OmniFocus. And he asked me what OmniFocus was, and I had to explain to him. He didn't know anything about getting things done and David Allen, GTD, and all that. And I tried to explain to him from a user interface what I can't do with Google Tasks and what, you know, what I'd like to be able to do, which is attach tasks that I list by context to trigger them to or attach them to another list of projects that are multiple action outcomes. And so I can see my outcomes and all the things that need to be done to get to that outcome. But at the same time, I can see each of my to-dos within context, which is the GTD thing, right? He was really interested in it and took some notes and stuff. So if we end up seeing GTD functionality in tasks, finally, probably has nothing to do with me because there's a lot of people that love David Allen at Google, and he spoke there. So, but I don't know. Maybe not. If it turns out that this guy is the one that programmed it, I'm taking credit. If you get project linking functionality in Google Tasks, and then I will. I told him I would get an Android if he did that. So if he does that, hey, speaking of getting phones, gosh, my phone is just dying. Like I get 92% and it dies. So I took it and went through the giant rigmarole. Man, talk about things that are complicated. You think figuring out how to get first class without paying for it all the time is complicated? Try getting in and out of a phone contract and upgrading looking at all your options and thinking through it, you know, with promotions and all this stuff when you have a cracked screen. So my phone, I was doing that Verizon thing where you pay, you know, you're paying the phone off by the month, and I had a cracked screen. So the best I could do for insurance was a $199 replacement for this iPhone 6, right? Anyway, long story short, after like a long time at the Verizon store on Friday, on Thursday, I finally figured out how to go about doing this. Gonna fix the screen, trade it in. But tonight when I get home, I will have a brand new iPhone 7. So I'll probably have an iPhone 7 segment or review or something at some point this week because I have to set that all up. So if you hear me switching at some point in the next year to an Android, I mean, he told me, you know, and something else I'm going to throw out there. I heard this about this a couple times while I was out there. He had a phone that he really, really loved, and it was crazy fast, and it was called OnePlus or Plus One, one of the two. And it was a $200 phone, runs Android, and he's a Google guy. He could buy any phone he wants, and this is what he's trying out, and he loves it. And I mentioned that to Ann, and she said that a couple of her friends are using that phone. So evidently it's kind of known on the West Coast. I haven't heard about it out here, but Plus One or OnePlus, I'll have to look it up, one of the two, and it runs Android, and it's $200, and evidently it's an amazing phone. So there you go. If you're looking for a new phone, maybe look into this Plus One, OnePlus, whatever it's called, and see about that. So yes, I get a new phone tonight. Super excited about that. And, okay, so going back to Santa Cruz over the weekend, I was there to do two things. I was there to preach after a mass, or to speak and present after a mass. I call it preaching because it's from a pulpit, and I was talking about theology and exhorting people to do something. So, you know, I felt like I was preaching. I love preaching. And so I was preaching, whether you call it that or not, I preached it. Even if it was a presentation, I preached that presentation. I love preaching. I mean, I tell you what, it's one of the biggest arguments on the pro side whenever I was doing vocation discernment and thinking about becoming a priest at one point was like, I love to preach. It's just, I'm never happier than when I am preaching. Well, maybe not never, but I'm definitely happy when I'm preaching. So I was there to do that. And then I was there to work this donor event where we had a great event. So as I said before, Amber and Sue helped out, and all of us were kind of in the middle of it, but Amber and Sue just like, and stayed up like and worked hard one night on this food stuff. They just went overboard on the quality and amount of food we had for this donor event. It was like amazing. They knocked it out of the park. It was incredible. It was so good. And so we had some wine, and I was doing pour over coffees. We went and bought some gear for pour overs, and I bought some coffee from Cat and Cloud. And so it was a cool event. So, but it was interesting though, and I may talk about this. One of the things that I find most interesting. So at Mass, I preached about like why we're building a coffee house and why that matters, and why letting God see I used as the verse that I kind of kept going back to the responsorial psalm that God has shown his goodness, I think it was, to the nations or something like that, that God has made his salvation known to the nations. It's like how does God make himself known to all these other worlds and these other ways of thinking, these, you know, through your narrative, through your history with God. That's how he makes it known. God is never like in the Old Testament, and God is not this this philosophical God that you don't tell him which God you worship by, you know, ways that we might. We're like, oh, well, the God I worship is a Trinity, and he's eternal, and he's omniscient, and he's omnibenevolent. We're kind of more philosophical about it now. If you know, in the Old Testament, you would ask, hey, which God do you serve? They go, I serve the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, right? I serve the God that got Moses out of the desert. He got Moses out the desert. He got Daniel out the lion's den. He got Gilligan off the island. Yeah, sorry. Coming to America there. But yeah, he got, if you've never seen a movie Coming to America, the preacher that Arsenio Hall plays in that old 90s movie is worth the price of admission. I love the Lord. So I'm cracking myself up now. Yeah, but you see, I'm the guy, he's the God that did that, you know, that song that that Israel sings, that horse and rider, he's thrown into the sea, you know, when our backs were against the wall at the Red Sea, he opened up the Red Sea and then he destroyed the Egyptian forces. That's the God we serve, that God who did that in our history, right? That God, the God that acted in this narrative, right? The God that did that and did that and did that and did that, that God. And that's how we have this in our life. That's how we witness to God. That's why it's not just an argument from apologetics. You have to have actually experienced the living God. You have to be speaking from the point of view of a real encounter. You say, no, the God that got me out of this and got me past this and consoled me in this and held me up when this happened, that God, you know? And so I preached about that, and I preached about a coffee house as a place to be present and let people experience you and experience God by experiencing your narrative and your encounter with God, you know? And so that's what I preached about. And then, and it's interesting, every time I do this kind of stuff, every time I preach, or every time I especially to a large church, like where it's a mix of everyone, It's interesting to have the conversations afterwards, because there's people who, I mean, I got high fives from strangers coming back down the side aisle. I'd say 90%, man, I had like really great support from that church. The people there, for the most part, get it and are glad we're doing what we're doing, and they understand it. What's interesting is when you, and then, okay, it's cool when you run into someone who's like kind of just there, and they're kind of a cafeteria Catholic or whatever, and they don't really care, but I didn't want to talk to any of them. They like the idea of there being a coffee house because they want to get some coffee after Mass, and hey, it's good, that'll be good for the kids or whatever. You know, it's like they're not really, they're not one way or the other on it when it comes to that. What I find really, really interesting are these people that are very devout. And I talked to one or two people that are really, really devout. And they really believe what the church teaches in the sense of all of its dogma and everything. And they come to Mass all the time. And in some ways, we would, you know, we would really, really put them in, like they're in the choir. I mean, they really are there and they care and they really, really want, they really, really want to be Catholic. And they really, really don't get evangelism at all. And it's usually the older people. And I'm always amazed when you bump into these older people that are really, really, really devout, but they really, really see this as being their thing. And they're really, really scared. They've lived through the misapplication of Vatican II and a lot of dioceses and stuff. And they really, they feel like, no, don't bring anything in. Don't change anything because we finally got this to where it's stable. You know, they're just, they're really, there's a real fear, but there's not any real desire to spread the gospel. They don't understand why you would spread something. Why would we do that? We're going to get people in here that are not like us, you know? And it's, like I said, it's usually the older people who have survived the aftermath of the misapplication of Vatican II. But it always amazes me when I bump into those people. But, oh, goodness, let's head off to the break. Man, the brakes are catching me off guard today. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then all the color glass that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, so back to Santa Cruz. So I preached at Mass, had this amazing, amazing reaction from a lot of people. Really enjoyed it. Though my friend Ann, God love her, is one of the, she gets very uncomfortable and very nervous, and she was nervous for me, and so she was kind of pacing and kind of putting her hands over her face at the back, just because that's what she does when she was uncomfortable. And I was like, am I messing this up? I mean, it seems like it's going pretty well. I mean, I kind of usually can feel it when it's working, and it seemed like it was working, and she was acting like it was like a disaster. And turns out that's just how she acts when she's nervous. And so I teased her all weekend, so I'm going to tease her on the air about it. I was like, yeah, come on, man. But yeah, it turns out it went really well, despite Ann's pacing. But I love Ann Breiling so much. Shout out to Ann Breiling. She works so hard on that project. She's been working so hard on that project and has just been diligent trying to get this done for like a generation. It's like a decade. That's why she was so nervous every time something big like that happens. But I just have to tease her a little bit on the air. Yeah, so I had a great, great reaction. I was a little taken off guard, but one or two older people that were just like, you know, they were really worried about you kind of like changing anything, because then, you know, I think they've gotten burned so much. They grew up in this one faith, and then Vatican II came along, and then a bunch of weird liberal revolutionary types decided they were just going to just use Vatican II as an excuse to redefine how we do church in a lot of ways. And they finally kind of like found a place where they feel at home, and they're like scared to death that people are going to change it. But I think that something else I preached about is I think that as Catholics we are missional. It's not that we're not evangelized. We don't believe in evangelization. But that's something that happens in the missions, and the missions happen over there, right? But we're over here. But you send missionaries. The missionaries get sent to someplace else over there. And it's often the same places. I always talk about over there, like growing up, seeing bombs going off and like turmoil and war, like over there somewhere, and not really knowing it, having it affect me in any way, you know. So the missionary thing over there is where people are like, you know, completely different and maybe starving and maybe there's some war or they're, you know, but over there, that's where mission takes place, is over there. Because that's where the people are different. Everybody here is kind of like, well, we're all kind of the same, right? We're all kind of Christian, right? But over there is where that is. And it's like now, just, it's so funny. They're very, very conscious of the fact that the people across the street are very different than them. As different as maybe you, the people you would have encountered had you gone over there before. But because they're not over there, Catholics, especially older Catholics, don't see the need to go do mission and reach them, to build a relationship with them and earn the right to be heard the way our classic missionaries did. I mean, you know, a guy like St. Francis Xavier, go to Japan, he would wear the garb of the normal Japanese person. Mother Teresa would put on the sari instead of a normal habit and make that the habit of her order. You know, she would take on the culture and earn the right to be heard by serving, right? And we're doing that on the home front now because we are mission territory, right? And it's, I just don't think that's sunk in with the older generation. If you grew up very deeply and you became an adult in Catholicism before Vatican II, it's just, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see this generational shift as this happens. Because now, like I said before, I talked to an ocean of people after that mass and only had one or two conversations, which people were kind of reticent. Most people were like giving me high fives and asking when it was going to be open. And it's just got me thinking about the older people. And there were older people that were giving me high fives. There were older people that were like, yes, we can't wait for this to be open. Can I volunteer? You know, but it's just interesting when you see a couple people that don't get it. Now, here's another thing with older people who do get it and people that are maybe outside of the culture that you would normally associate with kind of specialty coffee. We had this donor event. So this, you know, it's a donor event. So there's people there, mostly they're going to be slightly older than me. You know, I'm in my mid 40s. There's going to be people in their 50s and 60s and 70s because they're the ones that kind of have gotten to the end of things. They've got some money. They're being philanthropic. You know, and that's who gets invited to kind of a donor event, right? That's just the nature of the game, right? But I was amazed by how many people we were manually brewing on a Hario V60 in a Acacia scale with a Buono kettle, this two or three coffees from Cat and Cloud. And I was explaining to people on, you know, and there's the first question about, well, isn't there some cream and sugar? And it's like, well, no, it's not that kind of coffee. Here, taste it. Oh, man. And even, I never get tired of watching people taste beautiful, fresh, properly brewed craft coffee for the first time. Because like, oh, this is so smooth. It's so sweet. It doesn't need anything. I'm like, exactly. Yeah, I love watching people have that experience. And sometimes, you know, the older people get, the less they kind of, it's easy to have that experience with them, it seems like. But man, everyone that I poured coffee for just loved it. And they were just like, what makes this taste so different? And how do you do this? And they had doctors and scientists there that were like taking notes on, you know, why am I brewing on a scale? What are these increments? What am I doing? You know? And it was amazing. I got to do a chance what we would normally do to earn the right to be heard with people that we're trying to reach. We were using that exact same process of the careful, loving act of craft in making all the moves of craft and to make beauty. We were using that as a way to earn the right to be heard with people who were donors. And it goes to show that you can really, there's something about coffee and something about that form of craft that really, it you can really do a lot with it. People become very, very, that you can really get to people with that, you know? You can really, earn the right to be heard, you know? So, finally, I want to talk about, so I saw my friends, Sam and Mary Curfee. So shout out to Sam and Mary Curfee. I adore them. They happen to be up north, even though they live down in Pasadena. They, with their kids, were up north visiting a family member. I can't remember who it was they were visiting, maybe her father or somebody. I don't know who they were. Somebody's family was up north, and they were visiting them. They'd been to a zoo and some stuff. And they met us downtown in Mountain View. So we went over the hill, went to Mountain View on the way to the airport, and we hung out with Sam and Mary Curfee. Now, I love Sam Curfee. Sam Curfee gets it on a deep level. He is a entertainment lawyer type that went to TAC with us, and he works down in Hollywood and is helping people use all kinds of narrative and stuff to get projects made, you know, getting projects made where they're using narrative to kind of talk about some of the themes and the ideas that we find meaningful in this world as Catholics and as Christians. And so him and his absolutely beautiful wife, Mary, and these gorgeous kids, and we hung out with them. So we go to a Red Rock Coffee. It was a coffee house owned by a Protestant church in Mountain View, and they just bought this little coffee house, right? And it's funny because Ann and I had been kind of not arguing, but just kind of back and forth about the possibility of maybe not always having Wi-Fi or not even having Wi-Fi in this shop, because both of us are disgusted by the fact that coffee houses have turned into just office extensions, and they used to be places of conversation. And I had been kind of arguing that, like, you have to have Wi-Fi. There's a way to do it and a way not to do it, but you have to have Wi-Fi. So we walk into this little Red Rock Coffee in Mountain View. So remember, this is a coffee house. It's a nonprofit coffee house owned by a church in Mountain View, the hometown of Google and all these people. So you would think that it's, like, real, real innovative and, you know, people be collaborating and stuff. And we walk in, and there's this huge banquette, which I love to put banquettes in shops, and all these tables, and then all these chairs facing the banquette at all these tables. And all these chairs were empty and unusable because each table was taken up by a person sitting on the banquette with a laptop in front of them with their headphones in, working. Like, I mean, a giant long coffee house, a whole wall of people just sitting there, every one of them at a single table by themselves, headphones in, working from the laptop. No conversation, no community, no, like, way to join them. Just, like, a bunch of seats, basically useless, and people just at the office, away from the office. And I just looked over at Ann, and I was just like, oh, okay, maybe we shouldn't have Wi-Fi. I mean, look at this. It's just like they're plugged in. They're just like drones. It's like, I mean, just no one was talking to each other. There were a couple of people at a tall table kind of like talking to each other, but they all had their phones out. And I'm like, my gosh, this place that used to be so powerful because it was a place of community and conversation, you know? So we hung out with Sam and Mary. We ended up going to a park, and it was pretty funny. I heard a great line. We were running behind, and we texted them and said, said, hey, we're on our way. And they're like, that's fine. We're running behind. We move like a herd of turtles. So when you have a bunch of kids of different ages and stuff. So that's always fun whenever you go to I get to experience like the absolute beauty and the absolute like terror of having children when you're hanging out with parents and they're at a playground and kids are like, you know, climbing on things and pushing each other off of things and stuff. It's just like, and we were there when there's all these different families there and everyone was playing. And I was just like, wow, it's like, you know, kids are just kind of all consuming. So, oh goodness, the reality and the beauty of family at the same time. Well, I'm out of time. I had to take peasant class on the way home. No first class for me on the way home. Kids were crying in front of me. It's a lot harder to take when there's no free booze back in the economy class. I'm telling you, we should make nothing but two seats on each side of every airplane, or at least give us a whole airline with that option. All right, I'm out of time. You're listening to The Counterposition. Let's pull the plug. Pop the cork on another episode. We'll see you next time.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.